All right. Well, welcome, folks, to another one of our Multiply Vineyard webinars this evening. Tonight, we're talking about four keys to a healthy marriage while church planting, and I am so excited for the folks we have with us. Quick details, if you haven't heard already, open up your chat window. You have some buttons in the top left. You have a little raise hand button. You have a Q&A button. We're really excited to interact with you tonight. We hope tonight feels a little more like kind of sitting around the dinner table together, or sitting in Kurt's office together, or in the living room with Rob and Tara there, than it does just you listening to some video of some people who you don't know, or watching us on YouTube, or maybe you are watching this on the recording on YouTube later. Who knows? But good to have you all with us. And yeah, we have a bunch of great panelists who are going to be joining us here. So I'd love to introduce Kurt Attaway. Kurt is a pastor at the Pearland Vineyard in Pearland, Texas, and also a licensed marriage and family therapist. Kurt, hi, how are you, and what's going on in Pearland this evening?
I'm doing well. It's just an honor to be a part of this conversation and thankful for the opportunity to be with such a great panel. We're doing really well. Pearland is the first suburb south of Houston, one of the fastest growing suburbs in the Houston metropolitan area. And I've been on staff at the vineyard there for almost 10 years. I grew up in a vineyard family. We planted a church when I was in seventh grade. And so love the vineyard movement. My wife, Lauren, and I have an anniversary coming up this summer for 11 years. And we've got a 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and 7-month-old. So they are keeping us on our toes. And we're really in an exhausting but wonderful time of life.
Thanks, Kurt. And we also have Rob and Tara Wallace from the North Point Vineyard Church in Granger, Indiana, which is also Michigania. Did I say it right? Is that close? Okay. That area around those two states. And how are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great. We planted the church 4 years ago. We've been in Northern Indiana all our lives. And so this is really home for us, but we've kind of bounced around to different communities throughout the Michiana region over the last 30 some years. And we were on staff at another vineyard church for 10 years before we started this one on the north side of town 4 years ago.
Life is good for us. We are busy as well. We have 3 little girls who are 3, 4, and 7. So they keep us pretty active and keep our home messy and life fun. I like it.
And if I can say, I'm on a handful of calls with Rob, and I think he has the 3 cutest little girls I've ever seen. They like pop into these little video calls, like around the webinar here, meeting with Rob, and they're adorable.
You'll see them any minute now.
They might make an appearance tonight. Well, folks, great to have you with us. If you haven't heard, join us in the chat window, open that up and say hi. And let's just kind of dive into everything we're talking about tonight. So tonight we're really talking about marital health in the context of ministry, in the context of church planting, and we have a lot to say about that. But I'd love to start, Kurt, just hearing from you a little bit, and Rob and Tara hearing from you a little bit about this idea of what's at stake. Because we know that marriage and family life is foundational for doing ministry. And so we know there's going to be impact. If marriages aren't very healthy, that's going to not just impact you guys individually, but it's going to impact the church and your ministry. So Rob and Tara, kind of why does it matter? Tell us a little bit about your experience.
One of the things that we realized from the get-go was that if we, as leaders over this brand new church, what was happening in our home, what was happening in our marriage, led right into church life. And so from the very, very beginning, we wanted to make sure that we were starting in a place of strength and unity so that we could minister out of that place to these people who were coming on board with us in a new church. So right away, it felt like everything was at stake. Here we were taking this big risk together, and we wanted to see God's kingdom move in powerful ways. And we knew that that was only going to happen if he was moving in powerful ways in our relationship. And so from the get-go, we've tried to keep it on the radar, but that doesn't mean that it didn't take us by surprise a little bit, just the intensity of it. And the reality that, wow, what's happening in our marriage is now going to have impacts on this new church and on the individuals who call like this their church too.
Yeah, that's I think great. Just to kind of add to that, just for the last almost 5 years, I've been working in a private practice providing couples therapy in addition to working at the Vineyard Church. And I just have seen couples, you know, kind of get sidetracked a little bit. And so I think one of the things that's really at stake is what's primary. And just what's primary is the health of marriages and family life, just our home life. And that we wouldn't lose sight that I think there's a huge invitation to us as we say yes to Jesus, that we allow our marriages to be the second yes. And that they really should be encouraged to move in front of ministry, in front of the church, that we can be responsive to our spouse. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just there's a primary relationship that is intended to lead the way, not get put kind of in a second tier. And that is very hard to do with the demands of church planting, especially.
Yeah. And I feel like so often as we talk about marriage resources, right, that piece that it is difficult can be hard to come by. You know, you come to the marriage seminar and you feel like, oh, everybody's got it figured out. Oh, they got it figured out. But reality for us is, wow, that's really hard. And so tonight, as we keep talking, we are going to welcome a lot of honesty around this conversation. We're going to, Rob and Tara have some tremendous sort of experience in their past 4 years of church planting. And we invite you guys as well to just be honest about what's it been like for you? What are the areas for you that have been difficult? And we want to hear from you a little bit. So I'm just going to jump in here with a quick little poll. So you're going to see a screen pop up for you to click on. We want to know a little bit about you. Tell us, are you discerning your call in ministry? Are you a church planter preparing to plant? Or maybe you've planted within the past couple years? Are you a pastor, maybe a pastor's spouse who's joining the call? Or do you have another role? And you could just kind of tell us that via the chat window. These are going to be some things we're going to do throughout the conversation just to make sure we're connecting a little bit. We have two church planters on the call. That's awesome. And we know that these stats are a little funny because we know some folks are joining with their spouse right now. So it's not a one-for-one. But you can click as many of those as you want. So click that there. And as they're clicking, Rob, maybe just kind of tell me a little bit, do you have any other reflections on kind of the impact there of healthy marriages and ministry?
Yeah, well, I think one of the unique things about, for us, co-pastoring, it's been so much fun and such a stress point in our lives, because where we had done ministry before, we kind of operated in parallel positions, and we got to work together, which was so much fun, but we didn't really have to deliberate anything at the prior church. But now that God's kind of called us into co-pastoring, when it's good, it's really great, and when it's bad, it's it can just be catastrophic. You know, like we can, if we're having a hard season, a week or a couple of months where we're not running on all cylinders as a married couple, you can see the effect all throughout our church. Our leaders see it in us, and then they reflect that back to us. And it's it can be extremely good to co-pastor and to plant together, but there's a lot on the line as well.
Yeah.
Just last week, I was having coffee with a friend who's a leader in our church, and we're talking about life and marriage, and we're pretty transparent with our leaders. But she said to me, she said, yeah, you know, I feel like I've noticed that you and Rob seem to be doing really well. And I thought, yeah, I think we're doing great. But she said, you know, a year ago, we just moved into a new building. She said, I could see a tension in between you guys, even in the way that you would stand together in church. And I had to think, wow, how insightful on her part. And were we really giving it away? Because apparently we were. Because that was a tough point in our ministry history as a church. And it was a tough season in our marriage. And so even something as simple as, wow, could she really read our body language? Mm. Apparently. It's a reality that we carry whatever is going on here into the church with us when we get there.
Yeah. As you're sharing that, I just think about how our culture wants to separate things out. So you've got my marriage over here, my church over here, my friends over here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think God has made us to be whole people and whole beings. And just from like a systemic view, you can't check that stuff. And Right. And so it's just such a good reminder that what happens at home and our key relationships really impacts the whole life that we live.
So I think that's so helpful to be just kind of talking about transparency there, right? And Rob and Tara, you guys saying like, people are going to see it, right? And to lead well into this is also, they're going to see it when you guys are doing well. Like you just, like she noticed. So hey, I'm just going to show real quick for everybody. We took that little poll, who's in the room. So I'm going to share that with folks. We have 43% of folks who are church planters who are with us. 14% who are discerning their call in ministry. We have a few pastors and pastor spouses with us. It's so great to have you here. I'm going to share another one now because the hard part about these great panelists is they want to know who's in the room. And, you know, usually they get to walk in and know who's there. So we want to hear a little bit about, are you married? Are you arriving to this conversation as somebody who is married or single? And are you doing ministry with your spouse? So there's another poll right here. We ask these because we do know that this conversation, though specific and helpful, isn't exclusive, right? We know there are folks who are single in the church and called to that, who just aren't married yet and who are doing ministry. And so if that is you, we're glad you're here as well. We're Absolutely. Super glad you're here.
Yeah.
For those folks who are excited about being married and ready to get some resources, I also want to make a quick plug. At the front end of our conversation here, I want to make a quick plug. We're doing another webinar next week. You maybe have heard about this just because we've sent out a follow-up email here and there about it, but we're doing a webinar called Thriving Church, Thriving Marriage, How to Co-Pastor with Your Spouse. So tonight it's really for anybody who's doing marriage and ministry. Now, there are a few specific sort of crazy folks like Rob and Tara who do ministry co-pastoring together, co-pastoring a church. And so we invite you to come back next week with the Gatlins, Michael and Brenda Gatlin of the Duluth Vineyard, as well as our national director, Phil Strout, and his wife, Janet. They are doing that, and we just wanted to make you aware of it. If you haven't heard about it yet, we'd love for you to be there as well, and that'll be really good. So looking back at our poll here, we'll show that to everybody. We have a bunch of folks who are married, and most of you are doing ministry actively with your spouse, with just a handful of folks who aren't. So that's just good to know, kind of for our panel. As we talk, we're talking to a group of married folks. So that's great that everybody's here. Let's dive into our next little kind of section here, Kurt, and we'll have you lead us. Tell us about how communication plays a role in this.
Absolutely. So in 2012, I finished my master's in marriage and family therapy. And one of the things, just as we've read and spent time with couples, it just has been so clear that communication is the leading edge for connecting in marriage and in intimate relationships. And so, you know, some of the things that I just want to highlight is that when it comes to connecting, communication is always worth the investment. You know, one of the ways I describe it so often is if you want to have a large bank account, you got to put money into the account, and you got to put money into the account consistently and over time. And when it comes to communication and relationships, it's exactly the same. You know, one of the things I want to say about communication is that we want to invest well and we want to invest often. A study that Prepare Enrich put out with about 50,000 couples surveyed found that communication was the single most important factor for a satisfying marriage. And I just think that's so telling about what our heart longs for, about this idea of friendship in marriage, and that it really is something that we can cultivate intentionally. We can press in, we can carve out time. And I think that this is one of the things that we can just find rhythms of investing in our marriages that are daily and are positive. And there's some great resources that highlight the importance of daily dialogue and daily kind of compliments. And I think that one of the things I've seen when couples are struggling, which is normal, just beginning to intentionally point back towards what is good and what is right within the connection, and just verbalizing that, vocalizing with gratitude and kindness, begins to show a communication that's worth the investment.
Yeah. One of the things that we've found to be really interesting in that process is knowing when to communicate, when it feels like we're always communicating. How do we communicate and meet those emotional needs that we have?
Yeah.
How do we have quality communication when it feels like what we do all the time is have conversations and hash out every little thing, all of those details, all of the meetings, you know, feedback for each other. So how to have life-giving conversation can be a really hard thing to navigate for us, I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, as you're sharing that, just kind of one of the things that sparks for me is just how do, especially when you're tired at the end of the day, how is it that you can opt in and choose to really invest well? And one of the things I say is this is really a risk kind of reward place that we need to kind of step forward with courage and vulnerability. You know, I think about so often, like when somebody asks you, how are you doing? Or how was your day? It's just too easy to go, ah, it was fine. You know, it was fine. And so what's interesting is that's just a subtle moment where we maybe miss an opportunity to kind of gain some emotional intimacy with somebody who's really asking us a meaningful question that's very caring and kind. And it's where we have to kind of begin to press in. And so, you know, one of the things I'm kind of curious is just, what do you think it takes? Like, what kind of formula, if there's a formula for intimacy? Because that's really what we're talking about, is we're talking about fostering a connection that cultivates emotional intimacy within our marriages. And so what do you think it takes to kind of have that? And one of the things that I think is so important is as we see, I think sometimes there's this idea that it takes a lot. It's like we got to carve out 38 hours a week, you know, to have a healthy marriage. But how do you do that if you have kids and if you're exhausted, if you're working one or two jobs? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I've been so encouraged is there's some really good research that's out that it's not so much this quantity as it is quality and consistency. And so I'm just a huge advocate for kind of that consistent rhythm of communication and connecting at an emotional level with eye contact and just kind of slowing down, being present to each other. And I'm kind of curious, how have y'all experienced that kind of in the rhythm of planting?
Yeah. We literally communicate all day, every day, but most of our communication is about the church or about kids. And so what we've had to do, what I've decided is really just the first of this year was to be very intentional about checking in with Tara. I've got three times a day that I make a point. I've got an alarm on my phone. She figured this out a week ago. I've been trying to keep it a secret. I think eventually she saw it going off every day at 11 a.m. and then at 3 o'clock, like during nap time. Sometimes she'll be at home with the kids, and I'll give her a call and just check in with her. And then we try to debrief at the end of the day. But those have been really important things to do. I think the last couple of months have been really good. We felt more connected on a relational level, not just like, hey babe, I got a question about church. But how are you doing today? And how are you able to do any soul care today? Are you relaxing? Are you able to not just kids and church and business and paying bills, but how are you doing on a soul level? It's been really important. I've got a reminder. I've got a bracelet too. We do a message series every January at our church, My One Word. But I cheated this year. I've got two one words. I've got my My One Word, but I've also got another one that just says, it just says ask is all it says. Yeah. And so now the gig's up on that one too. I'm going to have to come up with some other secret ways to connect with my wife. Because now she knows about both of my my sneaky asks.
But the truth is that we found that you just have to do it deliberately.
Yeah.
Because church planting, just like that, becomes this all-consuming thing. And especially if you're doing it together, if you're partnering together, you know, we don't have separate jobs where we both go away and come at the end of the day. So there's this natural reconnect at the end of the day where we say, oh, how was your day at the dinner table? I know, we literally share an office. You know what I mean? And so I know every conversation he had today. I actually don't need any more information. But to deliberately try to get at each other's souls has become really important for us to ask the questions that are going to bring life into our conversation and connection into our relationship. It has to be deliberate, because if it's not deliberate, we'll skip it. And the truth is, we did that for about 2 years as church planners.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh wow, we need to do something about this.
You know, I just hear y'all talking so much about vulnerability, you know, just the willingness to open our lives up, which can be hard in ministry because you're so focused on everybody else, you know, just practicing awareness, slowing down. And there's a great resource on vulnerability from Brené Brown. She's here in the Houston area, gained some notoriety with a TED Talk that kind of just exploded onto the scene, and has written a couple books that are great. But she gives this quote about vulnerability that I think is really compelling. She says, waking up every day and loving someone who may or may not love us back, whose safety we can't ensure, who may stay in our lives or may leave without a moment's notice, who may be loyal to the day that they die or betray us tomorrow, that's a vulnerability. And I think there's this insecurity within us that we have to just resist and move towards trust and move towards vulnerability. Just begin to say, I need to be present. I need to be open to communicate and to just be vulnerable to share who I am with the other person. If I'm never sharing who I am can never be cared for. And so I just would highly encourage us to cultivate space and time to connect with, you know, yourself, and then make that available to your spouse. Just as y'all are talking about, I mean, it's just so evident in your rhythm, and the reality of church planting is draining and it's exhausting. And so it really is that deliberate step forward of choosing to communicate, that's important.
Absolutely.
So in all this conversation about communication, we're hearing intentionality, we're hearing there's sort of a depth that isn't just about recapping what was happening during your day. And it's maybe not about a large amount of time. Kurt, you asked a question to us as we were preparing, which is, how much daily time do you think healthy couples actually need? And there's been a bunch of research done on it. So we want to ask everybody, how much time do you think a real healthy couple, how much time do they actually devote to this kind of communication per day? Now, Kurt, you established that it doesn't take 36 hours a week,
yes.
But we've given a few options here that we'd love to poll everybody for. So what do you think it takes? 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, more than 60 minutes? We'd love to hear from you there. And then I just want to point out, we sent over some resources. So in case you haven't seen those yet, we sent over the Prepare Enrich Daily Dialogue and Compliments resource. We sent over Brené Brown's TED Talk. And then we also sent over a last one here, which is Communication, Communicating Fondness and Admiration. And Kurt, just to give a little preview of what that is, tell us about that one. What specifically is that last resource?
So that's a tool from John Gottman, who is a social sciences researcher whose initial connection was the University of Washington. We actually use this in our couples small group, where we go kind of sent the couples on mini dates and gave this as a conversation starter. And what you do is it offers about 60 words that describe a character quality in your spouse. And you're supposed to just take time reading through the list and find three words out of the 60 that you would use to describe a quality or a characteristic in your spouse. And then you add a specific instance where you experienced that quality. And these are encouragements, these are uplifting, positive words to build your spouse up. And it's just wonderful. When you slow down and you validate the gift that you see in them, and you give a specific instance when you experienced that, you felt it. It is such a wonderful gift that you can share with one another. And it's such a practical exercise. And we found it to be helpful. It was life-giving to my wife and I when we did it. And it was life-giving to the other couples in the exercise. And John Gottman's a premier name currently in kind of the mainstream marriage and family therapy world.
That's great. Thanks, Kurt. So, Kurt, I'm going to share results from our poll. Most people think it takes more than 60 minutes. 63% of us think that. A handful of us think it takes about 60 minutes, a solid hour, you know, a TV show worth of time with our spouse. And a handful of us think it just takes the daily news, just about 30 minutes. Nobody picked 15 minutes.
Yeah.
How much does it take, Kurt, as one who has studied this and there is a big study on it?
I've got good news. It's 15 minutes. Clifford and Joyce Penner have kind of highlighted this this formula for emotional intimacy, and their encouragement is 15 minutes a day is all that's needed. But they say specifically quality time, eye contact, no distractions, tender touch, availability, holding hands, dialed in. And so I just want to encourage our couples, if you can really get present to each other in a quality way with 15 minutes, then the other time that you have the rest of the evening watching a show together, eating a meal, it will just carry over. And they take it a little bit further. They encourage, if you're going to do 15 minutes a day, to add one night a week, one day a month, and then one weekend getaway a year. That's couple only. And so they just kind of see that consistent long-term investment.
I love how many exclamation points are now responding to this. That's so right. Maisha says, right. Wow, 15 minutes, question mark, exclamation point. And Matthias as well, Matthias and Susan say, we voted, but we think it is about quality over it. And so that's just right. And, you know, hearing that is so much freedom for folks that I would think who are one doing ministry or, you know, have kids like me. Like I have two kids at home, and it just feels like at the end of the day, you're just trying to parent together to make sure nobody's bleeding or hungry or crying half the time. And the 15 minutes thing feels really like, oh, we could fit that in. We can work that out. That's really good. So go for it, Tara.
One of the things that's been really good for us is just to have some of those key phrases like, we're going to be okay. So even when we're walking through one of those crazy seasons, when it feels like we might be losing our minds or losing our marriage or losing our ministry, to be able to say, hey, make some eye contact. We're actually going to be okay, right? Good. Then we can keep going. But when we just blow through life too fast to even pause and have those tiny moments, then that's when those fears increase and insecurities increase. And so it's been really helpful for us to even just have those tiny moments. So I'm not too surprised, actually, when I hear, 15. Oh, we can do that. Yeah.
That's right.
That's great. So, Kurt, let's kind of dive into the next section. So it's not just about communication. We also want to talk about conflict, because inevitably, all of our relationships aren't rosy all the time. Tell us more.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's worth the investment, it has to be worth the fight. And so we want to really recognize and relate to conflict in a way that kind of begins to move us towards one another. Every single couple has conflict. That's a given, because it's two uniquely different human beings living so close together that it's just inevitable. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important to recognize is it's so easy to try to avoid conflict. Even if you look at the kind of the Genesis story and what happened and where there was a kind of the brokenness of relationship is that they hid. And I think that's kind of what's natural is, you know, we aren't really sure and we kind of back away, or we're afraid and there's fear and there's uncertainty and there's insecurity. And when things kind of get a little bit shaky, or if there's hurt feelings or whatever it might be, it's natural, our natural inclination is to kind of dodge. And so people avoid conflict because it's just flat out uncomfortable. Yeah. It is uncomfortable. And I think we have to be able to agree that of all relationships, our marriages have to be the place that we resist that and we really move towards, because avoidance produces distance. And that's not what we want. We want to be close. We want to be connected. The two, you know, becoming one. And we have to agree that what I think so true about conflict is it usually is about things that matter personally. Hmm. And so we have to begin to build a narrative and a habit as a couple to engage life where it matters. And that's usually going to be around conflict. Because if we avoid conflict, it becomes a dismissive kind of approach. It becomes like we discredit the other person's opinion. And instead of strengthening trust, we're kind of slowly eroding it. And so I just want to kind of highlight four natural patterns for conflict, and then kind of allow Rob and Tara to give some insight and some kind of color commentary to it. But there's kind of four common responses to conflict that are not helpful at all. And this comes from some extensive research that was done by John Gottman. And he says that what he sees in couples that are struggling with conflict is that they become defensive, which is kind of like a self-protect mode. They will stonewall, which is like, nope, you don't get access. That means I emotionally shut down, I close off, I basically opt out of the conversation at that point. They get very critical. There's a lot of criticism, which are like cutting remarks. And so it kind of makes it a very unsafe space, or they express contempt of their spouse. They kind of go to this place of whatever the issue is that is your issue. You're the problem. You're a horrible person. And their words become incredibly painful. Mm-hmm. And I think what that shows me is we have a serious choice to make when it comes to conflict is, are we going to look out for ourselves, and or are we going to begin to fight for our spouse and for our marriage in a way that's productive?
Rob and Tara, how have you guys sort of wrestled through that conflict, right? And hearing even these four ways that commonly couples deal with things, do you see yourselves in those four in any spots?
We really do. After we discussed this in preparation for tonight, we said, wow, we know exactly who we are. Rob gets defensive. And I wouldn't have
used it. No, I don't.
You do. and I'm a stonewaller. And I never, it's actually really helpful for me to have that word now because I don't know how I would have described it. But that's kind of what we do. And I think we've actually known that pattern and lived in that pattern for a really long time. And because we kind of fall into those same patterns, I think what happens is just what you're talking about, Kurt, there's some fear associated with this and even a lack of trust. And so one thing that we've noticed in the last, I would say, year of our marriage is we've really been trying to dig into some of these things is we've kind of identified some of those fears and those insecurities. One thing that we've even talked about before is having like a code word, like, I mean, I've said, hey, babe, I love you, but when I have a concern to bring to you, I can almost know that you're going to be defensive, and that makes me really not feel safe. So if I come to you, can I say, like, rabbit foot, and you'll know that I'm going to, like, you know, I just need a magic word or something that will, like, make you think and know, oh, Tara's coming to me with an issue that is sensitive and personal for her. I need to be careful and cautious and not put my defenses up or else she's not gonna feel safe. And I have to do the same thing when Rob comes to me. I have to prepare myself to not just shut down and push back.
Yeah. And rabbit foot seems like a good safe word while you're in church too, right? You know, you could say that in the lobby and people are like, what are they talking about? But you know, it's something big. Rob, how have you experienced that?
Well, I think just recently I've started using the phrase, you know, babe, can we have like real talk? Can we just kind of bring it down a notch and kind of like talk for real, talk about the heart of the matter. The hard thing about our communication is, I think, so I'll get mad, which is actually like, it's probably executed as, I'm sorry, I get sad, but it's perceived as mad. And Tara just kind of cuts the conversation off a little early maybe. And so we end up never really getting anywhere. One thing that we've put into practice is just having a referee. It's been really helpful. We've done marriage counseling, and we've both done coaches separately with one another and separate and together. But some of the conflict that we've had has not been able to be figured out on our own. We've had to bring in some trusted resources because we just keep doing the same thing over and over again. You know, I just get mad, sad, and she just doesn't want to talk about it. And so we never get anywhere. So that's been helpful. Spiritual directors. We did a PSR, Pastor Sabbath retreat with the Vineyard a year and a half ago. And that was tremendously helpful. That just opened up the entire conversation to be able to really address a lot of things from even our own childhoods. And the root of the issue is not really what's going on today. It's 20 years ago. In a lot of instances, it's who I was before Tara and who Tara was before me. And we've needed on a number of occasions, we've needed outside help to help us get where we need to go.
Yeah. You know, as I'm listening, I just kind of think about my own marriage, and one of the things, just y'all both mentioned it, but trust. Trust is what allows it to feel safe, but just this reality of fear and then anxiety and insecurity is what triggers in the midst of conflict. And that makes it hard to see the other person, to focus on the other person. I'm more likely to make judgments and, oh, you did that on purpose, and you were trying to take me out. And just a couple tips about conflict. And one is, the more you can own your own emotion, like just take ownership of what you're feeling, take ownership of your perspective and share from that place. Because the moment I say, well, you did, then it feels like I'm, you know, placing blame and kind of moving at my spouse, and that will cause defensiveness in them. And so, you know, really just saying, I'm experiencing this, I'm feeling this, and even just being able to say, I feel insecure, I feel afraid, because then you can begin to experience trust with your spouse. And I just know that's something that's had to be cultivated in our own marriage. And I just found even recently, I was trying to kind of protect or buffer my wife from certain things. And so I would just kind of like not share, but then that limited our connection and our ability to really handle conflict well. Some of the research, just a couple tips, the master couples versus disaster couples have the same amount of conflict. And just as y'all shared, it is normal for couples to have patterns that they're stuck in conflict. It's kind of the same issue, because the reality is you're different human beings, and that's the one issue that's really hard for you to find unity on. And so my wife and I say that our goal is to keep the conversation going. And if you're feeling stuck, one practical tip is to really work hard to ask questions. If I'm asking questions, I'm kind of holding some confusion still. I haven't passed judgment. I haven't decided this is exactly what's happening. And so we say, keep the conversation going and stay confused, because if you're confused, you're more likely to ask questions.
That's great. And just as a note for everybody, I'm just sending over a link here to Kurt's blog on a little blog post on a few more of those tips for fighting for your spouse, not fighting with your spouse. And if I may, Kurt, it's one of the freshest, snazziest looking blogs around. So it's a good spot. If you just want to go check it out there, lovegrowlead.com. And, you know, we had a couple people mention as you were talking there, one was from Ryan saying it's really important to be aware of patterns from your families of origin. Rob and Tara, you guys mentioned that. Do you see that a lot with couples that you work with, that there's so much of how we deal with conflict is default wired into us from our families?
Yeah, so family of origin is significant. I mean, there's some great family systems resources on that that look at kind of what we learned and kind of what we have generationally received from our families. And so I think being able to talk about, well, what are the beliefs about conflict and what was it like in your home? Did it get loud or did it get quiet? Did it get verbal? Did it get physical? What do you actually think is happening? What does conflict mean? Because I think we associate things with it. And really our family of origin, so the family we grew up in, is a significant teacher in our life. They kind of tell us what's acceptable or what are the normal boundaries. And I just know even kind of more verbal versus less verbal, it's not right or wrong, but it can be a challenge for couples to navigate. And so there are definitely some great resources that you could just, if you just research family of origin or family systems, there's a lot that can be read out there. I think Friedman is the name of, like, Failure of Nerve is a resource that I've heard a couple different people talk to who writes on that. So
that's great. Yeah. So we also want to talk a little bit about kind of dealing with the difficulties over the long haul. So we've talked about kind of communication as the general thread that needs to continue happening. Then we've talked about conflict kind of in the moment or dealing with it then. But there's this level of perseverance that we've signed up for a lifetime of commitment with this person. And so it's we need to pace ourselves. It's the marathon. It's not just can we handle the hard moment in the day-to-day. Kurt, what have you seen about dealing with those difficulties and being kind of persevering?
And kind of the thought here is that as a couple, you will face tragedy. You'll face disappointment. You'll face heartache. You know, one of the ways I've begun sharing some of my story is that my wife and I, we have three children and have had six pregnancies. And so some of the, you know, last couple of years for us in dealing with loss has created a very different marital environment. And, you know, just a couple simple things that I have found that have been helpful. And then as I work with couples in private practice who are just in crisis and, you know, in the thick of it, is I think we just want to know that somebody cares, that we begin to soften our heart, we soften our mind. And so one phrase that I use is validation expresses value. And sometimes you can't fix what you're actually going through. You just kind of have to weather the storm. You have to hang in there long enough to kind of see your way through it. And one of the things we want to really work at is validating what our spouse is experiencing, because it could be very different. It could be a totally different experience, yet you're going through it together. And I think this is where we just have to continue, why we've done the flow: communication, learn how to share emotion; conflict, learn how to deal with things that are hard and different; and then hang in there and persevere together. And one other thing, not only validating, like just saying, hey, I value you, I value your experience, I value your outlook, but is to practice leading with longing. I often describe that fear and hope live this close, that they're just the opposite side of the same coin. And, you know, the things I often fear might happen can also teach me about what I hope will happen. And we just have to kind of rhythm and practice saying, you know, particularly in difficult seasons, what is the longing of my heart for you? What is the value of my heart, the gift and the joy of my heart for my spouse, particularly when it's really stormy and it's turbulent? So, you know, validation expresses value, and we want to lead with longing when things are hard.
Yeah, absolutely. We think that's so important. One of the things that unfortunately has seemed true for us as church planters is that as ministry difficult, as ministry increased, so did difficulty often in our marriage. We had a point probably about 2 years ago where we looked back at our first 2 years as a church, and we literally did it on a piece of paper. We mapped out a calendar of all of the high points that we'd experienced in ministry. You know, when we did our first Sunday night service, and then when we moved to Sunday mornings, when we reached 100 people, when we moved to two services, our first big Easter baptism, and we literally had all of these high points on a piece of paper. And we realized that if we would have done the same kind of map for a marriage, all of those high points would have corresponded with low points in our marriage. Because as the intensity of ministry increased, go for it kind of people, like go big or go home, we are going to make Jesus famous and it's going to be good. As we pushed and pushed and pushed, we realized that this strain that it was really taking on our marriage. Yeah. Mostly, I think, because we had become inattentive to each other. We had really started living as coworkers instead of as a married couple, which meant great things for our ministry, but we felt it, and we know that we paid a cost for it. And so looking back, we've decided that that's not our MO anymore. We want to do this well. We want to do this really, really well together.
Yeah. We've had to, so in church planting, there's a season where it feels like a hustle. Like you really gotta fight for every person that shows up at your church and for every new leader. You know, it's just it's a struggle. It's exhausting work. But what we decided, this was in the last year, was that we don't want to just be church plant hustlers. We want to have sustained ministry for 30 or 40 years. And what does it look like? What does our church look like 30 years from now? And what do we need to do between now and then to get it there? And it's a lot less of a hustle, and it's a lot more, it's tremendously more strategic and calculated and methodical. It's just, it's not haphazard. You know, we've really shifted, and just in the last, maybe in the last 6 months even, we've been really focusing on soul care and sustainability and overflow, not overwork, because I think church planters can get stuck in the grind of just like hacking it out. But you know, we want to make it for a long, long time. We want our marriage to make it for 30, 40 years. We want our church to make it for that same amount of time, and it's just not gonna. We can't keep paying the price of church planting at the expense of our marriage.
Yeah.
At the same time, we've had people who've challenged us as a couple in ministry and said, you know what, you guys, that's just gonna be too hard. Maybe you should take a step back, or you can't, you know, it's you guys are gonna butt heads as we lead together. And one of the things that we've said is, no, we believe that this is something that God has called us to do as partners. We believe it's one of the reasons that God put us together as husband and wife, is to do this together, to set an example for our little girls. We have three little girls, and we want them to have great dreams for the kingdom, and to know their part in it as well. And so we've decided that that our marriage is absolutely worth fighting for, and so is this ministry. And so we're gonna fight it out as best we can, by keeping that communication in the forefront, by fighting for each other, and giving all that we've got.
And Rob and Tara, you guys mentioned kind of this book that is maybe a bit of a non-traditional marriage resource, but ties into this fact that you're dealing with both marriage and ministry at the same time. Do you want to tell them about a little bit of this Good and Beautiful God by James Bryant Smith?
Yeah, we read The Good and Beautiful God after coming back from the Pastor Sabbath retreat just a few years ago. And it really was so life-giving for us to read as people who take our role as ministry leaders seriously, and maybe sometimes a little too seriously. Just like you had talked about, Kurt, we had put some of those priorities in the wrong places, and taking those primary things, and we had probably elevated, I think, ministry to this place where it had become primary. And God really used that book in a corrective way for us, to bring our relationship with Christ back to center and our relationship with each other back to center. We actually walked our whole church through it last fall as a series, and read it, and then read the book together also in small groups, and it was really impactful for us.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things I'll just kind of add, it kind of addresses one of the questions that came through in chat, is this idea of balance. And, you know, to make it through the difficult seasons and make it through the beautiful seasons and make it through all seasons, I think it's just worth the planning. And so one of the ways I find balance, I work full time at the Vineyard. I have a part-time private practice. I've got family, kids, marriage, is to just recognize that it's not so much about balance, because balance kind of says equality, is that I would say it's about healthy boundaries. And so I just say first things first. We need to prioritize Father, Son, and Holy Spirit first in our life, if we're married, I think we allow our marriage to get, you know, dibs on our calendar before anything else. And then family, making sure if you have kids and you're parenting, that you block time, you guard time, you plan. And so one of the things that I've found is just really employing a calendar rhythm as a couple and as a family creates healthy boundaries. You know, if I have a meeting scheduled with a client, if I have a meeting scheduled with a leader at the church, I show up on time and I don't cancel on them last minute. Well, yeah. I should give my family and my wife the same privilege. And so I've just found that if you will live your life with vision, which was what y'all were talking about, this 30, 40 year play and purpose, then you can put my marriage first, my family, and then fill in ministry, because the ministry will take up all your time. So we've just kind of set a rhythm of prioritizing couple date night and looking kind of at a month at a time and make sure that gets first dibs on the calendar. And the other thing is just, you know, if you're willing to kind of schedule staff meetings, why not schedule a family meeting? If you're willing to do lunches with leaders, go on dates. Because I think if we can model well what a healthy marriage looks like, it will be contagious. It will be magnetic, and it will give hope to homes in the cities God's called us to. And that is really about setting healthy boundaries. And, you know, they could hire another pastor at the church if I left, but the ramifications of my marriage and my kids is a totally different deal. And so I think we have to just begin to build a high, high esteem for the importance of marriage and really carve it out practically in our calendar, in our schedules.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, that's great. And we've had kind of a couple questions come in, and we'd love to invite you, if you have any questions, to send those over now. One question was just a little bit about kind of coming back for Rob and Tara, you guys. How did you push through in the midst of the high season? You know, is it, can were there things that you could put on the back burner? Were there things that you had to deal with right away? You know, because the extended period, you can't never deal with it, but were there days where you had to say, we can't do it right now?
I think we've tried both. I think that there were seasons where we thought, wow, this is so important and so vital, this ministry goal, we're just going to push through. That's less of our MO now.
I don't know if those have been the healthy seasons.
No, I don't think that they were. But we did that. I would say our first 2 years was, we're going to push and we're going to keep going, and we'll talk about it later.
We'll deal with each other after Easter.
But what we realized was that there was enough damage done in those seasons that it wasn't worth it. And so we've made drastic calendar changes based on the state of our marriage and our family, where we've said, well, we're actually not going to do a small groups push this fall. We only have 4, and we're going to leave it there, you know, or we're not going to run out this new programming, because we need to make sure that we're okay. Because we've seen it trickle. We've seen the trickle down. We've watched our staff team watch us with a little bit of angst, oh no, are Rob and Tara okay? And you know, it's just like your kids in your home. When mom and dad aren't doing well, the kids aren't either. And we've seen the same thing with our team and leaders. And so we do that less, the push through this season. We do that maybe on a day by day or week to week basis. If an issue comes up on a Sunday morning, plenty of times we'll pause and say, we're going to talk about that later, huh? Mm-hmm. But we try not to push through seasons or weeks anymore, because there's, I think, too much potential for damage when we let that stuff go.
That's great. Well, hey, we want to be respectful of folks' time, and we've spent just about our hour here. And so I'd just like to thank you, Kurt, for taking time away from both the ministry, the family, and the practice to spend time with us here. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it's an honor. Absolutely.
And Rob and Tara, you guys are a tremendous model for working through the hard stuff and being really, really honest with this. And so thank you for doing that and being here with us. And as we go, I think it couldn't be more important to just pray over the couples here and the families and the kids and everybody. So Tara, would you just kind of wrap us up in prayer?
Absolutely. Love to. Heavenly Father, I thank you that you have invited us into this awesome ministry of the kingdom. I'm grateful, Lord, that you've invited our families and our marriages to play a part, that we get to model what it looks like to be part of the relational God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And that, and I pray, Jesus, that our marriages reflect that community and that love to our churches. I pray just a strengthening and unification of the marriages represented as we watch today, and the homes and the families and the kids that participate as well. Lord, we want to do this well. We want to live lives and create marriages and function as families that honor you and give you glory. Mm-hmm. And can Jesus bring people closer to your throne because of the love that we get to share together. And so we just ask for your protection and wisdom as we continue to walk and hopefully live more like you, Jesus. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, thanks, folks, for being with us tonight. Quick reminder, if you want more discussion on marriage, next week we'll do this April 5th in the afternoon from 4 to 5 p.m. Central time. So we'd love to see you back there for that. And again, just thanks again for joining us tonight and your honesty. We're so glad to have you with us. Kurt, Tara, Rob, have a great evening, you guys, and everybody else who's watching. See ya.
See ya.